today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, we have another update on Southwest flights to Hawaii. And if you like vacationing on cruise ships, you may be a bit alarmed about the story of the live hidden camera a couple found in their room recently on a Carnival cruise.
Our goal every week here on The Travel Guys is to make you a smarter traveler. And coming up at 3:20, well, we go over some smart things to do before you travel, like picking the right airline, the right airplane, wearing the right clothes, little things that add up to a great trip.
At 3:35, Ed Perkins joins us for the second part of our recent interview. Today, Ed reminds us of the opportunities to avoid travel tie-ups by using secondary airports. It's a segment road warriors won't want to miss.
Mark has been on the road nonstop for the last month in these United States, and at 3:50 we share his recommendations for food and fun in Cincinnati, Lexington, and along America's most famous highway, Route 66.
Tom's in Sacramento. I'm joining you from Albuquerque, New Mexico on Route 66. For the next 55 minutes, we're taking you on an information-filled travel adventure. We are Mark and Tom, the Travel Guys.
On the road again, just can't wait to get on the road again.
I got two tickets to paradise,
up to Alaska, I go north to Russia's own.
This is Tom and Mark. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for joining us. We're here every Sunday from 3 to 4 o'clock and at TravelGuysRadio.com, here to make you a smarter traveler and have a little fun along the way. I'm in studio right over here by Cal Expo, and Mark is more than an arm's reach away. He has been on Route 66, traveling with a group of Sports Leisure Vacationers, seeing the mother road, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that later on in the program. Mark, how's the weather there? You're in what, New Mexico?
We are in Albuquerque, where it is just absolutely perfect. It's probably in the low 70s, and of course, Albuquerque is the land of balloons, the big balloon fiesta, the biggest balloon launch in the country, which is held here every year, has just concluded. It finished last weekend. So still a few balloons up in the sky, as there generally is here in Albuquerque. They have this thing called the Albuquerque Box, which ballooners would know about. Mm-hmm. But it's something that makes Albuquerque the perfect place for hot air balloons. And Albuquerque is just a great place. New Mexico in general is a wonderful state. We'll talk a little bit more about our adventures on the old highway a little bit later on in the program.
All righty. Let's see here. As we always do at the top of every Travel Guys radio program, we bring you up to date on what's been going on in the travel news. And let's get to it. Mark, it's been an interesting week. What do you got for us?
Well, I got some fun things, I think, here. Tom, first of all, it's been a week since this happened. But actually a little bit more than a week. But you certainly, everyone who doesn't live in a cave has seen the video of the guy landing the airplane on the freeway in El Cajon.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Well, the student pilot, apparently, and just to make sure that the story is straight, it wasn't the student pilot who landed the plane. It was the instructor who landed the plane. There was some kind of failure, some kind of mechanical failure on board, and so the instructor took over and landed the plane on the freeway. Now, here's the deal. I'm traveling with a couple people who live in El Cajon on our Route 66 tour and who happen to live in the area, and they said that it took forever for them to get the wings off the plane so that they could get it off the freeway. Because, I mean, it was all great that the guy landed on the freeway and nobody got hurt, but now he's blocking a freeway in Los Angeles. So,
yeah,
on
not
a Friday.
Good.
Yeah.
The fact that he was able to actually find, and I saw the news coverage of it, where he says, well, I saw an opening on the freeway where there weren't any cars, so I landed, you know, there. And I'm trying to think, when is there ever a space between two cars on an L.A. freeway big enough to put anything?
So that was pretty lucky. Somebody was looking out after them.
Looking at the video, I mean, the guy really, truly did a brilliant job of landing that aircraft. And kudos to the drivers, because, I mean, you're driving along the freeway, and this plane, he had to come over the top of some people to land, and suddenly there's an airplane. So, I mean, if someone had panicked there, it could have caused the death of a lot of people. But instead, everybody kind of kept their cool and went, "Ooh, wow, this is pretty amazing," and slowed down and everything. And then I'm sure became fairly frustrated and angry with the guy after that point, because they couldn't just wind the airplane up and take off the freeway again. So that was, or just drive down the closest off ramp. That was a little bit of a problem.
Right.
all right. We mentioned in the headlines about a couple finding a hidden camera in their cruise ship stateroom on a Carnival cruise ship. This is just goofy as all get out. The couple was not very happy. Apparently, they found this camera among some of the technical wiring in their room. The camera was live, but Carnival says that they conducted a full investigation, and while they admit that a video transmitter was discovered in the couple's room, it wasn't hooked to anything or capable of doing anything. So I guess that is comforting to know, but the Carnival has been pretty hush-hush on it about what this all could mean. I mean, somebody obviously at some point made some effort or had some plans to connect some kind of viewing device in someone's stateroom on a cruise ship. So was it specific to somebody who sailed before them? Or, who knows?
Right.
Great mystery.
There you go. Yeah. Yet was it no word whether the camera was property of Carnival?
No, not yet. But we'll keep an eye on it, let you know if anything else interesting comes up on that. Okay, a couple of quick Halloween stories here involving travel. If you happen to be going through LAX on Tuesday of this week, and you happen to be in the international terminal, and it happens to be between 11 and 1 p.m., you will have the opportunity to see the third annual Howling Halloween Parade, featuring a bunch of the therapy dogs that regularly with their handlers are available in the terminals there at LAX. And if you're a fan of this program, I'm not a fan of animals on airplanes, but that has nothing to do with animals on airports. And of course, I don't mind animals on airplanes as long as they're not Great Danes or squirrels running loose through the plane or something like that. But anyways, if you happen to be at LAX on Tuesday from 11 to 1, they are going to dress up 20 of the therapy dogs in Halloween costumes. They have done this the last couple of years, and it's, as you might imagine, a huge hit. So we'll try to get some pictures and post them of the event and post them on TravelGuysRadio.com.
Therapy animals, particularly dogs, bringing them to hospitals for patients is a big deal. And then, helping de-stress passengers before they get on the plane. This past week, they brought dogs to the Sac State campus, to one of the main rooms there, so that the students could come in and, get a little bit of therapy. It was the finals week.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Well, it's proven that animals in airports are very stressful places. So people seem to respond well to the concept. So I can only imagine that animals dressed up in Halloween costumes will be as cute as heck, and there will be pictures all over the internet. We will try to grab some. Speaking of cute Halloween stories that have to do with travel, JetBlue says it will be giving away full size candy bars on Halloween on over 900 JetBlue flights. The airline will be serving over 100,000 pieces of full-size candy, including your favorite candy bars, Twizzlers and Starburst. Sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Don't you think? Latest Hawaii, quickly, Hawaii Southwest update. Southwest CEO Gary Kelly says for next year, Hawaii is their expansion focus. They will be placing a California crew base in the next 60 days in Los Angeles to start serving Hawaii flights. It appears as though we had hoped that the flights would be in place by the holidays. That's not going to happen. The flights are going to start in early 2019. They're just working on some some regulatory things. You know, Tom, the distance between California and Hawaii with no secondary diversion points is the longest distance on the Pacific Ocean of having to travel. In other words, you've got, you know, roughly 2,500 miles there where there's no plan B. So until you get 12,500 miles away, the plan is to turn around and go back. And then after that, the plan is to go forward. But there's no way to divert a plane and put it on the ground. So crews and lots of training has to be done, manual training and physical training of crews and things like that, and all of that has to be signed off on. So that's where Southwest is right now, and that will all be signed off on very quickly, very soon, probably in the next 30 to 60 days, and then we expect Southwest to ramp up their Hawaii flights very quickly. Fares to Hawaii for the foreseeable future continue to be rock bottom because of Southwest's planned entry into the market.
So
what
you're telling us that have those companion fares on Southwest, forget about getting to use them in the calendar year of which they would be usable, which is 2018, because it's just not happening. But you know what?
Better
well trained and safe than sorry. That's okay with me.
Well, I forgot about that, Tom. You were one of the people who got in on that deal of getting the Southwest credit card and getting the companion pass for this year. And of course, if you didn't travel a whole lot and you don't requalify for it, why, darn it, you won't get to go to Hawaii 2-for-1, but you are going to get some really great fares to Hawaii, I think, for the foreseeable future from California and other West Coast destinations. And that is your travel news for today.
All right. Here on the Travel Guys, our goal every week to make you a smarter traveler. And coming up in less than 3 minutes, some smart things to do before you travel. Mark has a great list. You're going to enjoy it. That's next. Hello there, Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano with you. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys and brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for joining us as we continue today. Mark, we teased earlier that we were going to help people make them a smarter traveler. Now, we do that within the body of the show, but this next 10 minutes, we dedicate specifically to stuff that I think is real usable. And when we travel, what do we need to do, Mark?
Well, it's when you're taking that long airplane flight,
yes,
you're going to Europe or you're going cross country, you know, you're it's 5 hours, 6 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours, more hours than you care to be on an airplane.
Right.
Then there are a lot of things that are important. And so we've got a short list here of just some things that maybe folks who are getting ready to go on a long flight might want to consider.
So these are things you want to do before you go.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Before you take a long flight.
Before you're planning a long flight.
A lot of them have to do with before you buy the ticket.
Is this stuff that you just made up?
No.
This
comes from our friends at Smarter Travel.
Well, then there you go.
And you can see a list of all this stuff at travelguysradio.com. Do not judge by price alone. If you find that, for example, that you're going to be traveling for 24 hours and you find that, wow, this airline's $125 more than this other airline, that's about $5 an hour. So yeah. Ask mm-hmm. yourself, mm-hmm. for $125, is it better to be a little less miserable for a 24-hour period at the start and the end of your vacation? Your very first thing before you get to where you're going, would you like to arrive and be able to walk off the airplane? Or would you rather they have to use Crisco to get you out of your seat?
You said a little less miserable, which would indicate that you, like a lot of folks, feel that almost all flights are miserable at one level or another.
You're not going to get you buy Economy Plus or whatever it is, and it costs you $150 or
right.
a couple hundred dollars more. Yes, you're going to be a little less miserable. You're not automatically going to be, oh my God, this is the most amazing trip I've ever taken in an airplane before. Look at the champagne, and the seat lies flat, and the curtain draws, and you know I have my own private. No, that's not going to happen. But if you get a little bit of extra room. The point is that I think people are the pennies and pounds get in the way.
Right.
When they're buying airline tickets, they're going on a vacation that's costing them $6,000 or $7,000, but they're not willing to go and spend $100 to $200 to make themselves more comfortable on the air flight. And what they're going to do when they come home, and they're going to complain about, is how miserable they were on the air flight.
I hate either being tired and worn out when I get on. my destination on vacation. And I even hate it worse when you're all worn out from a really crappy flight. At the end of a vacation, it pretty much spoils it. What else you got on your list?
All right, so look out for bad connections. Now, you're used to traveling domestically, and you think, you know, an hour, hour and 15 minutes is plenty of time to get off the plane, probably use the facilities, grab a snack, get to your gate, get on your plane, and off you go. Everything is fine. But when you're in a foreign country, in many cases, you may have to clear customs. You may have to pick up your luggage somewhere and recheck it or throw it onto a transfer belt or something like that. There may be delays involved here. You've got to have enough time. If you allow yourself 50 minutes or an hour and 10 minutes or something for an international connection, in many cases, you're going to get hung up. You're going to miss your connection and have problems. So make sure that you allow plenty of time. Do your homework, research the airport you're transferring in, find out, for example, Heathrow in London is a huge airport. And sometimes changing terminals and getting on a shuttle bus and having to change terminals, you in many cases need to allow yourself 3 hours in Heathrow.
Gosh.
Because otherwise, their chances are you might not make it. Okay, choose your airline wisely. This is kind of important because not all airlines are created equally. As we mentioned, there are some low fare carriers overseas, just like there are domestically. Realize that if you pick a low fare carrier that and you choose to go low fare, that you have chosen the most miserable way to get there. So if you are happy and satisfied with what you paid to get there, or that's the only way you can go, then good for you. But if you had expectations that you were not going to sit in a garbage can with a lid on top for 9 hours, then you should have done something else. And frankly, let's all be adults here and take some responsibility. This is your fault because you really should have done your homework and researched before you got on. Choose your aircraft wisely. Now, your aircraft and your airline are two different things. Many carrier.
When and how can you choose your aircraft?
Because they'll tell you when you're booking a flight, it will tell you what type of aircraft. And many airlines now are using 737s for extended flights. This is an airline with three seats on each side and one aisle down the middle. You don't want that for a long flight. If at all possible, you want a wide body plane, which is 3-4 or 3-5-3 or 2-5-2. And why would you want that? Because there are two aisles on the plane. So for moving around on a long flight, and inevitably at some point you're going to want to get up and move your ankles and keep thrombosis from setting in and just your legs from falling off. So having two aisles gives you a little bit more room to be able to move around in. So that's something to consider. Do absolutely anything you can do to get an upgrade. If you can get into first class using those points or miles that you've saved or business class for all of those years, this is the time to use them. This is the time. This is a time when you will consider that you have gotten great value. Also, choose your travel clothing carefully. You're going on a long trip. You want to be comfortable. You want to be in layers. The plane may be warm. The plane may be cold. The plane may have a draft down by your feet. The plane may have a draft up by your head. So if you're going to be on a plane for a long time, you want to have the ability to be able to adapt to your environment. And you've got to be able to do that with the limited things that you brought on board the plane with you in the limited space that you have. Also, if you're a person, if you're planning on staying awake versus being asleep, you know, do you need a pillow or something to lay your head on? If you've got your tablet or whatever you're bringing on the plane as your entertainment device, make sure that you put plenty of stuff on there for coming and going and maybe sitting a couple hours on the tarmac. And you don't want to put all brand new movies that you've never seen because you get into them 20 minutes and you might say, I don't like this one. Get a few movies from your bucket list that you've always wanted to watch, things that you know that you'll really be engaged in because it will make the time on the airplane go a lot faster. And finally, if you're going, prep like you're going on a holiday. I mean, you're going on vacation and the airplane flight should be part of it. So if you have sprung for a little bit more space or you've used your miles to get yourself an upgrade that gives you just a little bit more comfort, good for you. If you haven't, do your homework. Try to get on the best aircraft with the best airline that has the best ratings for the route that they have and the aircraft that they're using. And do your homework and make yourself just a little bit more comfortable. Does that all makes sense to you?
I love all that. Yeah, absolutely. No, great stuff. Great stuff. By the way, you're listening. If you just tuned in, we are the Travel Guys. That was Mark Hoffman with, well, some great tips on pre-planning your trip. I'm Tom, and we have a couple more items on our list today, do we not, Mark?
I've got one other thing here. This is not about things to do for a long flight. This is a total across the ocean, so to speak.
All right. Let's go across the ocean. Let's go to the beach.
If you go to Hawaii,
you
know that getting a jellyfish sting...
Just get in the water and get a jellyfish
can
sting.
...can be something that is not pleasant.
Oh, why are we talking about that?
And
let me guess.
So what we're trying to tell people is make them smarter travelers. There are specific times when you are much more likely to get a jellyfish sting in Hawaii. I never knew this.
Well, who does?
Until I read this article.
You're not just making this up.
I am not. If you go to travelguysradio.com, you will see a list of an article that has a list of all of these dates. And I'm going to tell you, if you are an astronomer, that you won't need this list. Because 8 days after a full moon is the time at which jellyfish, that you're most likely to be impacted by jellyfish, that's the time that they're out and are the most active, south-facing Hawaii beaches, 8 days after a full moon. Typically, the period lasts for 3 days.
Wow.
So... they have, Hawaii Tourism has created a list of all of these times and the beaches and the days for next year, 2019, when you should stay away from the beaches in Hawaii, or at least stay out of the water, because you're more likely to get a jellyfish sting. And not only does it have a list of the times to avoid the jellyfish, but it has what to do if you get stung by a jellyfish.
Uh-huh.
So talk about making you a smarter traveler. If you're not smart enough to avoid them and you get stung by one, we've got the cure for that, too. So travelguysradio.com will give you a list of how to avoid jellyfish stings in the island.
What's coming up next?
Coming up next, Ed Perkins joins us to talk about alternative airports, places you can fly to avoid the crush and the crowd. That's next on The Travel Guys.
As always, Sunday at 3 o'clock here on KFBK 3 to 4, it's the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Your hosts, Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano, we're here with you, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And once again, we return to the well of knowledge. That would be Ed Perkins.
That's a really good description.
Yeah, I bet. Always nice to be with you guys.
You never thought that you'd be the well of knowledge, I bet.
No, that's a good description. Ed has been absorbing all of this stuff and, you know, taking it in and spitting it back out in language that we can understand for a lot of years. I've been a tour operator for almost 40 years, and I've been reading Ed's stuff for a good amount of that time. Today, Ed, I wanted to talk a little bit about one of your writings for smartertravel.com. You talked about alternative airports. There are lots of cases around the country where you can choose to fly into an airport that's 20, 30, 40, 50 miles away from the big hub airport, and in many cases get a better fare, be facing better logistics, and also not have quite as much possibility of your travels being interrupted. Can you share with us a little bit about some of these alternative airports and some of your ideas for staying out of the muck with us, Ed?
Well, you really have two questions here. One is, if you have a choice of hubbing, which airport, where you have to connect from one flight to another, are there any airports that are better than others? And the answer is yes. And you can kind of start out with the worst ones from the standpoint of delays and cancellations. Are the two big New York airports, connecting airports, Kennedy and Newark, and the infamous Chicago O'Hare. And there are better airports in terms of lower delays, either because of weather or because of air traffic or whatever else may involve the process. But in the mid-country, for example, Houston is usually ranks pretty well. Dallas-Fort Worth doesn't rank as well as you would expect it to in its Texas climate. Denver and Salt Lake City both do quite well, despite the fact that they're often inundated with snow. And on the West Coast, Seattle is generally much more reliable than San Francisco, which has its capacity problems. The other side of that question is if one of these big areas is your destination, you can sometimes find a secondary airport that is a lot less crowded and a lot less congested. In San Francisco, of course, you know about Oakland and San Jose. And in L.A., you've got, in addition to international, you have Long Beach and Orange County and Burbank, and to a lesser extent, Ontario. In New York, you don't have too much because all three of the main airports are pretty bad. But you do find service out quite a way out of town at Islip, Long Island, or at Newburgh, New York, Stewart Field. You don't have many choices in Chicago or Boston, but in Dallas, you have the option of Love Field if you're flying Southwest. So quite often, if you can, you find these smaller airports are considerably easier to navigate, and often you find lower-cost airlines operating at them.
Well, and in particular, a couple of the ones that I'm fond of, Burbank, of course, is an alternative to LAX, but the Long Beach Airport is a great option. And for those folks who are here in Sacramento, we have Southwest and JetBlue currently that serve the Long Beach Airport a couple of times a day. The fares are low. The airport is small. It's really easy to get in and out of. And as you mentioned, Dallas-Fort Worth as opposed to Love Field. Well, you know, Fort Worth is out. The reason it's called Dallas-Fort Worth is because it's basically between the two cities. So it's 20, 30 miles out of town, whereas Love Field is right downtown. So once again, when you're flying in and you've got a business meeting or something like that, if you're having to take a taxi or get some form of ground transportation, being at Love Field would be a lot less expensive if you had something for downtown Dallas. So that's kind of an exception where a downtown airport is a better choice. But certainly, as you point out, in the San Francisco area, San Jose is a much more reliable airport because they don't have the low ceilings and the overcrowding situation that they have at San Francisco. Another one of my favorites, Ed, is Cincinnati. Delta doesn't have quite as many flights there as they used to, and we don't have service, direct service from Sacramento to Cincinnati. But Cincinnati, for a hub airport, is a very good place to connect. And I noticed on your in your article here, you had J.D. Power's scoring and the like. And there are only a few airports that rank with a score over 800 here. Orange County, Dallas, Love, and Cincinnati, it looks like, are the three.
Yeah, and of course, the choice of hub partly depends on your airline. I mean, if you're flying American Airlines, you don't have a Denver hub. So if you're flying there, the good hubs on American are Dallas-Fort Worth and Phoenix and Charlotte. If, on the other hand, if you're on Delta, the better connecting hubs are Cincinnati, surprisingly Detroit, and Atlanta, and Salt Lake City. And on United, you got Denver, you got Houston. So, and of course, Southwest, well, Southwest really doesn't do quite as much hubbing, but you got Dallas Love and Houston and San Jose, and Chicago Midway is scoring pretty well. And, of course, with Air Canada, Vancouver and Montreal outscore Toronto.
And which is increasingly important because, for example, from Sacramento, we have service to Vancouver. So you could very easily make a Canadian connection by flying out of here and flying up to Vancouver as an airport that has a very good rating. Ed, let's switch gears here just for a moment before I let you go. We're in the airport now. We're talking about airports that are better or worse to fly out of. Let's talk for a minute about airline seats. You opined here on something about airline seats recently on smartertravel.com where you talked about why airline seats aren't about to get wider. And you explained about what some of the realities of that are. Take a minute or two, if you would, and share with our listeners why it is that airline seats are kind of the way that they're going to be for a while.
Okay, well, first let me say that The reason for all this is that the most recent FAA bill, which both houses have passed, calls for the Department of Transportation to direct the FAA to set minimum width and seat pitch standards for commercial airliners in the U.S. And everybody seems to think, oh, wow, we're finally going to get some loosening up of seats. Well, that really isn't going to happen. In the first place, the vast majority of domestic flights these days are in either 737s or Airbus 320 family airplanes. And in both cases, almost all of the economy seats are six across, three and three with an aisle. And the fact is there's no room to make those seats any wider than they are right now. The only way you could do that is by saying everybody has to go to five across seating instead of six across. And that would result in such a huge increase in airline costs and therefore fares that there's no way the government is going to require airlines to put in wider seats in those airplanes than they already have, because you can't do that unless you do go to five across. And by and large, the current seating on the jumbos reflects what you see in the 737s and A320s. So that's not going to change. Now, the seat, the pitch, the front to rear spacing, theoretically, you can change in increments of a half an inch or an inch, depending upon the design. And so the FAA could say, well, yeah, well, you need to get a little bit more legroom. But the FAA is already on record as saying even the tightest pitch we have now is safe. And bear in mind that the basis for setting these seat standards is safety, not comfort. Safety is a key issue of the FAA. Comfort is not. So I think all these Pollyanna reports that, oh, we're going to get some relief from tight seating and government's going to take care of it, it isn't going to happen.
Well, because it would cost the airlines way too much. It's not feasible from a cost standpoint. And Ed, this brings up kind of an interesting point, is that folks are always complaining about the lack of space and other things on airlines, but almost all of those things are the way they are because people are not willing to pay for more space or more whatever. I mean, now the airlines have systems where, you know, you want some more space, fine. You want 3 more inches, 4 more inches, you can pay us for it. But by and large, airfares are going the other way. We're seeing basic economy fares where you have to basically get on the plane naked as opposed to things the other way. Ed, thank you once again for sharing some of your expertise with us about the airports and the airplanes themselves. We appreciate it, my friend. We will put a link to some of your writings at smartertravel.com, at travelguysradio.com, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good to me.
Once again, we are the Travel Guys, and we have one more segment left of our program. And coming up right after about a 2-minute break, Mark takes us on the road for food and fun in Cincinnati, Lexington, and along the way, going to talk about his recent trip along America's great highway, Route 66. That's next on the Travel Guys.
Baby, if you've ever wondered whatever became of me, I'm living on the air in Cincinnati. Cincinnati, WKRP.
I feel like a disc jockey. It's 11 past 11 at 11 o'clock here. High in the mountains, low in the valley, dark until dawn, and clear unless it rains is the forecast. it's Mark and Tom. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys here on KFBK every Sunday 3 to 4. And as we promised, we're going to visit, you know, what now appears to be one of Mark's favorite cities, Cincinnati.
Yes.
For a couple
of
reasons.
Can I just say that was one of my favorite old television shows.
Mine too.
Anybody who's been around long enough to remember the episode where they threw live turkeys, it was, out of the sky
of the
at the shopping mall. Mm. It was truly one of the great comedy moments. Yes, Thomas, Cincinnati. We took a mystery tour group there a couple weeks ago with Sports Leisure Vacations, and I found that in my group, almost nobody had ever been there before. And so I'm thinking there may be a lot of people in Sacramento who have never been to Cincinnati. They've never, you know, we've talked about the Donut Trail in the county adjoining Cincinnati, Butler County. And so we made a couple visits there. And of course, we tasted Grater's ice cream, which you can buy at Whole Foods markets in Sacramento. We had Skyline Chili, you know, the chili with chocolate in it that they serve over spaghetti, which I think is a little weird, but people in Cincinnati seem to get into. There are a lot of really cool things to do and fun things to do in Cincinnati. The Ohio River is there. So cruising on the river, and every few years they have a tall ships gathering there. The American Sign Museum is in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's all, they have this incredible collection of signs, not just neon signs, any kind of signs that have been painted or put up anywhere in the country, and including their most recent sign has a Sacramento connection, kind of. The Cincinnati Gardens were torn down in town. The Cincinnati Gardens is where a basketball team used to play many years ago that eventually, that had come from Rochester and made its way to Kansas City and eventually ended up in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
The building that the later Sacramento Kings played in. The Underground Railroad Museum in Cincinnati is, gosh, that whole story is just a fascinating American history story. There's lots of history right across the river in Newport and Covington, where there are also some great hotels. If you stay across the river, you can walk into downtown Cincinnati. How cool is that?
Nice.
Just really bourbon tasting, of course, because you're in Kentucky. Cincinnati is really a destination that I hadn't thought much about. But it's really a fun place to visit. It's inexpensive. The cost of living in Cincinnati is way less than it is in California. So you're going to find moderate prices. You're going to find really nice people. You're also going to find, from here on in, a lot of really cold weather. Because as we were there, the fall colors were kind of late this year. So we got there before the colors, but not before the weather started to turn cold. And you could just tell by the looks on people's faces that 45 degrees was not all that cold to them. They have a historic German neighborhood there, said Mr. Hoffman with two N's, called Over the Rhine, with a place called the Finlay Market, which is just this wonderful collection of vendors and shops and stuff like that you find in some cities. And it's just a great neighborhood. I mean, really and truly, if you're looking for someplace fun to go, or you find that you're going to be, Cincinnati's going to be on your list as a convention stop or business meetings or something like that, instead of going, Cincinnati, I don't know, what am I going to do there? Look at it as an opportunity to discover a really interesting American city. And don't forget the cities around Cincinnati, because there's donuts and gangsters and river cruises and all kinds of fun things.
I'm fascinated by and we talked about this off the air earlier this week, when it was the chili.
Starline and also Gold Star Chili, two chili chains around Cincinnati. Quickly here, Tom, before we run out of time, I wanted to mention our group also dropped down to Lexington, which is only about an hour's drive from Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. So if you're in the area, that's a wonderful opportunity to be able to discover horse country there. There's at Keeneland Racetrack, there's a fall and a spring meet for 3 or 4 weeks that if you happen to be in town, a lot of the Kentucky Derby winners are born and bred there. So it's something you can tour the horse farms. Most people never tire of driving around Lexington and seeing all of the green grass and the white picket fences and all of that stuff. Great, great place to visit. I want to spend a little bit of time talking about Route 66, because that's where I am now in New Mexico. We have come from Oklahoma City on this particular leg of our journey, the second half, and are eventually going to end up in Santa Monica next Thursday afternoon. We have made some wonderful fun stops along the way here, Tom. The halfway route on the entire trip from Chicago to Santa Monica occurs in a little town of Texas, Adrian, Texas, which is about 190 people. You can stop there at the Midpoint Cafe. And if you ever get to Adrian, Texas, I strongly recommend that you stop there and dine at the Midpoint Cafe. And I strongly recommend breakfast there. They make a BLT, and they have homemade sausage gravy at the Midpoint Cafe that will is better than anything Mom used to make.
No, my.
Amazing. We stopped at Dot's Mini Museum in the little town of Vega, Texas. A lady created a museum in a yard that's like about 8 by 10, something like that. We ate dinner one night at the Big Texan in Amarillo, Texas. Which is home of the free 72-ounce steak. If you can eat a 72-ounce steak and all the trimmings in an hour, they give it to you for free. Otherwise, they sell it to you for $72.
That's great.
Yeah, Big Texan is not necessarily my favorite place. My favorite place we've eaten at so far was Ann's Chicken Fry. If you ever get to Oklahoma City and you like chicken fried steak, there's a little joint called, and it's really a joint, called Ann's Chicken Fry that's been there forever. You have to put that on the top of your list. This evening, we're going out here in Albuquerque, and we're going to go cruising on Route 66. We're going to have malts and milk cakes and eat dinner in a wonderful restaurant that's in an old restored filling station. The group's up in Santa Fe with Chris Galloway today, who is my assistant on this trip, which allows me to do things like be on the radio with you. It is important to note that today is Christopher's 40th birthday. So happy birthday to
Happy birthday, Christopher. Boy, hardly looks a day over 23.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm only a little bit jealous. He's been a buddy of mine for a long time. We have some great places that we're going to visit when we leave Albuquerque. The Acoma Pueblo, the Code Talkers exhibit up in Gallup. We are going to stay in some wonderful old road hotels. We're going to visit an old friend of mine, Angel Delgadillo, over in Seligman, who practically saved this old road by single-handedly. We're going to stop in Oatman, and eventually we're going to end up in Santa Monica. So, and next week I'm going to regale you, I'm sure, with even more of the adventures of the old highway. But let's just suffice to say that if you get an opportunity to get out on the old road, if you are a roadie person and you love off the beaten track, there is no finer place in the country than a trip on any part of Route 66.
Outstanding. Well, okay, that wraps up another Travel Guys. Remember now, you can check out everything we talk about at TravelGuysRadio.com plus more. So check that out. And next week on the Travel Guys, we're going to have if you've ever thought about going on a cruise, which I have, and I've never done that, it's a great show. We're going to be talking to Ramona and Michael, a couple of cruise experts from Sports Leisure Vacations about cruising. Mark, that's it.
That's it, Thomas. You remember to dance like nobody's watching, and we'll see you all next week on the Travel Guys.
Stay well, my friends. See you next time.